Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Ron and Don Show on Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to the Ron and Don Show. I'm Don Allen in Studio A, and over in Studio B is Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. Good morning, Mr. Edwards. How are you?
Mr. Allen, and as I was speaking to you as we were going into the final 5-second countdown, I think we have at least raised question this morning in a country that is, you know, secure and everything like that, but it's now at war. We need to, I don't know we'll get many calls, people terrified of it, but it's not our problem. Weren't you drafted into the armed forces of the United States?
No, actually, I was a volunteer in October 1979.
You volunteered.
It was,
there you go.
Yeah, it was, and I volunteered because in high school, one of the things that a lot of teachers said, especially our black teachers that we had in Minneapolis Central in the 70s, said all of them, the majority of them were in the military. They were in, you know, the end of World War II, Korea, a couple other things, and they said it's the best way to get discipline. And, you know, I was a wild buck in 11th and 12th grade, and they said, join the Army because you have a lifetime of benefits. So they did this one study that showed that Israeli high schoolers are mandated to do at least the minimum of 2 years in the military after they go to college. I mean, after they go to the military, and then they get their colleges paid for just about anywhere they want to go.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was a great deal. So I did it. I had a wonderful time in the military, but
well,
getting
see,
back
there,
to your question.
There it is. Now, you were volunteer. Now, I was drafted into the United States military in 1962. In fact, was slated to go to a place called Indochina, known as Vietnam. And I just, with all of these new Americans, these refugees and others that have come into the country and enjoyed the benefits, particularly from the southern hemisphere, et cetera, I just think that they should be happy and jump at the opportunity to become, quote-unquote, members of the American military. You know what I mean? So, I don't know. Keep it, think about it, Don. You know, it's the question that we opened up this morning here on our program from our studios in the Twin Cities. You know, should Americans be reintroduced? And boy, because we have a lot of young Americans or people that, you know, say they want to be Americans. And the opportunity to be in the draft and to stand post, you know, you're a military person, you know what that terminology, to stand post, if you will. And I think of myself and many other young Negroes in the very early 1960s, man, that were, quote-unquote, inducted into the armed forces of the United States. I just, you know, we're wondering why we just don't see more enthusiasm for our young folks, right? You know what I mean? So, anyways, it's a good question I may ask periodically this morning over the next, 58 minutes. But what do we got, Don? What are we looking at, man? Everything is happening and going on. What's up?
Edwards, and just something I want to speak on real quick. I don't know if you probably saw this in the Star Tribune. Chief Justice Page and one of his cohorts want to insert a constitutional amendment to make education a right, but also adjust the Minnesota Constitution.
Education opportunity. Yes, I love it. I love it. I think it's great. But what's your take there as an educator?
To create everyone gets an education. The problem I have is that Justice Page, well-respected, I respect him. I've talked to him on several occasions. He is not he's looking at the state constitution, but someone's going to have to look at the education piece. We are no longer creating factory workers like we were in the 40s, 30s, 40s, and 50s, okay? And employers from 2020 beyond want graduates with creativity, vision. They know just how to discern between up and down, right and left, right or wrong, et cetera. And we're not doing that in the schools. We're dumping in information, most of it useless, and we're coddling the students. Oh, that's okay. You don't have to write a 5-page paper. Just write me a paragraph. And so that skill set is missing from 99% of the students in the Minneapolis and St. Paul public schools, period. And you can quote me on that. And so with that said, we have a lot of learners from other countries coming in, and they seem to be catered to where our Black American, White American, Hispanic, Latino American that were born in country are pretty much being ignored. So while this constitutional amendment might be good, there's two sides of it, and I think it's lopsided right now.
Well, so how do you, I mean, what is your thinking, and how do you make up the deficit, the deficiency, et cetera? I mean, don't these people, don't they have to be educated to meet the demands of the, society? So what do you do with them? Cast them out? Are there enough industry jobs, simple labor? I call it simple labor, or what?
Yeah, they have to be educated, but the school system, right now they're using a thing called a Danielson model. The kids sit in a row and the dad behind desk, and the curriculum from the district comes out. It says teach textual analysis, okay? That's great if you're going to teach textual analysis. I've read thousands of books, so yeah, that's good. But the thing is, I might have a group of kids that like tennis shoes, that like basketball, football, and they like rap music. Why can't I, as a placement English teacher, use basketball, tennis shoes, rap music, and teach these students all the skills they would need to get into a high-end college? I'm talking about Yale, Princeton, Stanford. And allowed. That's not allowed. So the curriculum needs to change. But also, you know, there's this move by this white professor named Paul Spies to get more Black teachers, but it's a money grab from the state. So what happens is, you know, Minnesota statute 120, and let me go backwards, 119 AMB and 120 AMB already has the necessary language in there to create this pathway. But they're not looking at Pearson testing. They're not looking at the PELSBY, the Professional Educator Licensing and Standards Board, of their procedures. It's like this, Mr. Edwards. You were in corporate America for a very long time. When they hire you know if that employee is going to cut the mustard. Okay? Right now, what the state does is that you can go to Hamline, spend $120,000 for a couple of master's degrees in teaching and education, and still the state. Now, Hamline says, okay, this Don Allen is fully qualified to deal with any classroom, suburban, urban, it doesn't matter, any city, all Black, all white, all red, it doesn't matter. He's qualified. Now, what the state does, the state says, you have to take these tests designed by a company in Boston that are not culturally competent, number one, or culturally responsive. Number two, you have to follow our rules set up by some white bureaucrats that say, okay, you need to do this and you don't have this. I know there are Black men and women off the street that can come in and teach any class, any discipline in any public school in the city. But if you want to, it's like my mom in the 1960s. She was a teacher in Mississippi to all the Black kids that were in one schoolhouse on the plantation, okay? Mm-hmm. When she came to Minnesota, married me, by the time it was time for me to go to kindergarten, she told my dad, I remember this distinctly, Mr. Edwards, she says, I'm going up there to Como Elementary and see if they hire me to work as a teacher or an assistant teacher with these kids. My mom came back so upset. She said they looked at her and talked to her like she was an animal. This is 1955, you know? And so with that said, you still have that same structure in place for people of color. And I'm not hollering victim, victim, victim for my conservative friend. I'm not saying victim at all. I'm saying that this is the issue. In Minnesota, we have failed. If these schools don't start being held accountable, held in state receivership, administration flipped, we're to continue. So getting back to the original thing, Page's Constitution, Justice Page's constitutional amendment will work, but it has to be in lockstep with several other levels of engagement, or else we'll continue. In closing, we have 3 years for the St. Paul and Minneapolis public school system implodes on itself. And I'll stop there.
Well, Don, one thing that I would suggest, I mean, I've heard these arguments for years and years and years, actually even before you were born. Back in my day, if you will, in fact, the first year of education when I still was living in Missouri, before I was brought up here to the beloved North by my father, I went to a two-room schoolhouse in Kansas City, Kansas, where the schools were in at that time, 1944, were segregated. They were actually segregated. The Negroes could go to the little two-rooms schools, one-room school. And, in fact, I went to a little school out by, for those that are tuned in and listening, out by the Paseo Park, where the zoo and everything is, the little Negro neighborhoods out there. And I used to always wonder, because when I began school here in 1945 in Minneapolis, where I thought I was in the great white liberal heaven, if you will, the first school I went to was Plain Elementary School, which is now gone. It's where the Minneapolis Housing Authority facility is located. And I went to Blaine. I was in Blaine. In fact, actually, they put me back a year, as they normally did to Negroes coming out of the South. some way or another, I hadn't got the right kind of education from my Negro teachers. I never saw in the Minneapolis Public School District, I never saw a Negro teacher until I was in the 10th grade. At Minneapolis Vocational, after having attended school at Blaine, a school called Lafayette, which no longer exists either. It used to be right down Lindale and the freeway, where the freeway is at now. And it caused me, as I matured, as I became an activist and et cetera, I used to ask where all the Negro teachers were, because by the time that I graduated from Minneapolis Vocational, there were only two Negro teachers in the entire Minneapolis public school system. And at that time, Minneapolis still had a population of over 500,000. It was shrinking. It had been 600,000 when I first went to kindergarten in 1945. So I understand what you're saying, and maybe one of the things you should think of doing, you say you have met with former Justice Alan Page, now retired from the Minnesota State Supreme Court. You may want to meet with Alan, see if you can get a meeting and a one-on-one, and provide these kinds of reflections. I noticed at the press conference that you're talking about, he was with the chairman of the Federal Reserve for the Federal District of Minnesota, Federal Reserve District of Minnesota, and they had their bow ties on and stuff like that. But I would suggest, and of course the phone lines are open, it'll be interesting to see if anybody calls with any reflections with regards to your observations and call for reform, because that's really what you're talking about. And white folks basically have taken the position that they're the only ones qualified to develop, quote-unquote, the approach and the learning process. And I've heard white scholars over the years talk in terms that there's no need to change anything, because it's the reason that white America is, in the best position, quote-unquote, to provide direction to the Native Americans and the Negroes and et cetera. The Native Americans, we must be consistent with our history here now. Native Americans fought this battle 100 years ago. And as the genocide was being mounted against them, Native Americans were being put in little reservation schools. There were a couple like Carlisle Indian schools out in Pennsylvania where the white man was saying, you Native Americans, you red people, you need to have a better understanding of what it is that you should be educated on about and what your future should be. And there were Native American scholars that contested that and contested it with great vigor and et cetera. But the system went right on ahead and did what they did. And then, you know, they at the same time were looking at this very large number of young Negroes that were getting ready to come into the system as slavery ended. Because you got to remember, prior to 1863, I mean, we had tough cut because basically we couldn't even be educated. If well, you talk in terms of your mother, your beloved mother, coming out of a school system there in Mississippi, if you will, my mother taught in the Kansas City public school system, both when it was segregated and when it quote unquote desegregated, if you will, she taught for 52 years. And I used to listen to her and other black educators talk in terms of, you know, the doctrines that were being talked about. See, people tend not to remember or know or don't want to know that Missouri, as an example, was a segregationist state. And yet right across the Missouri River in a place called Kansas, it allegedly was, you know, was open and et cetera. So your point is well made. It is a doctrine that has been under discussion and debate that W.E.B. Du Bois and others began to talk about this 120 years ago and et cetera. I don't know that we have leadership. You need five or six educators with a passion, a burning passion, to move forward with some of the things that you just talked about already this morning. But failing that, then we just sit around and talk about it and the miseducation of the Negro, as was talked about Brother Johnson and others, just continues, man. And I can understand why you educators are concerned, because I look at these young people out here and look at the last couple of generations, a couple of generations before that, and the miseducation of the Negro is in full gear, if you will, and it is sad, and it is quote unquote a detriment, and it represents intellectual and educational genocide, if you will. But, hey, like I said, it's for the leaders. It's for those who say that they are the great voices of identification meaning knowing and understanding what it is, the trials and tribulations of the Negro, quote, unquote. And you need to hear those voices. And, you know, one of the places it needs to start, Don, is in the Congress of the United States, coming out of the Black Congressional Caucus, and in Minnesota, the few blacks that you have in the legislature, if you will, they need to talk about it. They need to join with the former Supreme Court Justice Alan Page, who was born and raised in the state of Ohio and became a living legend, if you will, coming out of the University of Notre Dame as a football All-American, and I can remember people thinking, who was Alan Page to think that he could be a Supreme Court justice? Well, Alan Page was a gifted human being. He's a gifted black man, and et cetera. So, anyways, phone number, Doc, open that phone number up. Maybe we got some people out there.
Yeah, that's the number, 426-3904, and we do have a caller here.
All right, go get him.
Call
Doc, have him come on.
Caller, are you
Don,
want to be in the queue?
Or
you
you're kind of breaking up every once in a while. Yeah, you need to tighten up on it. But go ahead, who we got, sir?
I think they just might want to be in the queue. It didn't appear that way. So I'll put him back in, or her, whoever it is, back in the queue. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. Our phone lines are wide open if you'd like to call. Good morning to everyone watching us on Facebook Live. You can post your questions there or call into that number, 347-426-3904. Yeah, Mr. Edwards, we've been on the air for 10 years now, and it's really interesting. In the last 10 years, as much as both of us have talked about education and the different fails in both St. Paul and Minneapolis, the proficiency in math, reading, and science has never gotten to 50%.
Yeah, no.
In 10 years. Mm-hmm. So I think we should be done talking because no one's listening. You know, in 10 years.
Yeah, but see, I'm always going to continue to talk because out there in the great expanse, if you will, there are those that are concerned and listening and want to hear a description and slash a voice. We have no alternative because you're talking about the survival of the sons and daughters of the African. And so we have no choice. But it is a sad commentary because people can wax and talk about hip hop and sports and, you know, such things as that, you know, or the crime and problems like that. But they don't want to really talk about and begin to challenge the white doctrine of educational methods in the Western world, and in the case of the United States and Canada, in two countries. That's the reason I said, I don't know why, you know, people are scared of the draft. I mean, these folks should be willing to get a good education in the armed forces of the United States of America, be prepared to fight and defend their nation, and at the same time bring their voices forward to do what needs to be done to change in a positive direction, where America of color, notice I said American of color, brown, red, black, I mean, you know. But your point is well made. Give that number out one more time, Don. Maybe we got some people out there from around the country, you know, maybe overseas, may want to ask some questions because the impression that's always left is that we are the best educated country in the free world, which is not true. But anyway, so go ahead, Don. What we got? And I've got an update. Want to give kudos, if you will, to a group of older Americans that knew what they were doing and fought that tough guy, the county attorney, Mike Freeman, fought him to a standstill. But give that number out, and then I'll come back to this, Don, because the phone lines are open for this also.
Yes, that number again is 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. 3904.
Yay! Yeah, okay. What happened was in August of last year, there was an incident. There are far too many, but there was an incident involving a family, an interracial family. The mother was white, father was black. But the three children, or young adults, were, of course, mixed race, if you will, two young ladies and a young man. He was the oldest, young lady by the name of Champagne. I know people were talking about, you know, what kind of name is that? You can always tell when folks are looking to bail out. Anyways, police were called to the home there on the far end of North Minneapolis, way up there next to the Brooklyn Center. City limits, if you will. There had been a domestic altercation. The mother was intoxicated. She was drunk. She admitted that fact. I don't know what it was, but she wanted the police to take her three children to jail. You really never want that, if you will. So there became available in the last couple months the body cam of the incident back on the 10th of August, 2019. And in that situation, initially, community was told there was a public meeting, press conference at the Urban League of Minneapolis, if you will. I'm hearing something in the background, Don. Is there some interference there, NSA trying to get us? And so what happened was that, you said, it is, or what was it? Or just you were turning the water on, or what? Yeah. So anyways, the police arrived, And when they initially arrived, it was quite clear on the tape that they were, you know, sympathetic to the white mother, that her white children had been a little naughty or disrespected. And so the mother was stumbling through trying to say what it was. So they went to they were in the back of the house, so they went to the back door, and the mother had actually locked herself out, or the kids probably had locked her out. Anyways, the door opened, very attractive young mixed race, Champagne Hale is her name, opened the door. She was not intoxicated. She was not volatile. She was not disrespectful. The officer's whole demeanor changed, if you will, and those of us that have watched the tape knew why. This was a Negro, black person, if you will, and he told her to get out here, you know. So she stepped down. And immediately they started patting her down, and which was kind of interesting because they actually are supposed to wait for a white female. And there's enough white female police officers in the Manhattan Police Department that they could have done that. And then they kind of started roughing her around. And then what happened, the door opened again, and very quietly was a young African-American, her brother, a couple years older than her, Champagne. About 6'4", about 210 pounds, in excellent condition. He, in fact, did not have a top on. He had pants and everything. And the officer, who is a legendary officer involved in the beating of many Negroes, his father was involved in using a plunger to penetrate the anal of an African-American about 12, 13 years ago. At that point, the officer really demeanor changed and told him, don't close the door. You know, hit it with his arm, pull the, well, he didn't pull because the brother was a good size and looked like that he could thump too. But he told him to come out. And by that time, lo and behold, they had started tasering Champagne, which was not necessary, was never shown as being necessary, et cetera. And, I mean, they did a job on her. And at some point, as the brother was protesting, as any brother would, his biological sister, they started trying to rough house with him. Meanwhile, police were coming. You could hear the sirens. And ultimately what happened, there were at least 16 police officers showed up. They then stormed into the house. There wasn't anybody left to jump on. I take that back. Just before they stormed into the house, the youngest child, African-American child, who was about, I think, 16 or 17, came, and, man, the officer grabbed her. It's all on video. Picked her up like you pick up a bag of corn, if you will, and slung her about 8 feet through the air into a fence, knocking her unconscious, and then they proceeded to really do Champagne in with the tasers, and they got these pretty new tasers with the long steel. They shoot that fire to you. And actually, they tased her so long that it actually caused her, this young lady, to actually urinate on herself. And you will urinate on yourself, and you'll even have a bowel movement if you don't know how them tasers work. So anyways, bottom line, they take all three of them to jail. They put 18 charges on them. We talked about it on this program. A lot of people didn't have an interest because they just assumed if the police said that these Negroes were out of control, then they're out of control. That's the end of the discussion. Well, a group headed up by Spike Boss, the Reverend Dr. Oral Hoax, a man by the name of Flowers, and some of the others of us, kept up the battle. First of all, we had the press conference in early August at the Urban League, called for fairness and justice and et cetera. Everybody kind of laughed at us. And so for 6 months, people were waiting. There were three court appearances by the three young African-Americans. And there was another press conference this past week in which we showed the video, the body cam, if you will. And that was at 10 o'clock in the morning. And by 4 o'clock, according to Reggie Chapman of WCCO, who was the only reporter that actually came, and he was the only reporter of color that showed any sensitivity or decency, the county attorney quickly announced that all charges had been dropped. Only the second time in modern history had charges been dropped against African Americans who had been charged of being in a quote-unquote confrontation and being involved in allegedly assaulting white police officers. So I just want to bring that message to community, if you will, and thank certainly Mr. Moss and others for their tenaciousness, for holding the line, and working with the public defender, Hennepin County Public Defender's Office, putting that that video, if you will, that cam on display, because it became an embarrassment, and particularly when Reggie Chapman showed it on WCCO, taking it off the cameras that we had gotten from our Champaign. And in closing, let me just say, Mike Freeman. I don't know what happened to Mike Patton. I guess he's still working on the Terrence Franklin case. Mike Freeman became extremely annoyed and upset because the Champaign Hale and her brother and the younger sister would not sign a document that said they would not make the tape available to the public until after they had been sentenced. And the public defender who was handling the case said that was BS and it wasn't going to happen. So I want to just pass that on because, with the exception of WCCO, there wasn't a lot of discussion, if you will, per se. All right. Any questions, Don? You got any questions? Anybody want to call in? Any questions?
Yeah.
But it's only the second time. Go ahead.
The phone line, let's take this caller. The producer say that your last four is 8867. You're live on the Ron and Don Show. What's your question, comment, or concern?
My name is Tanae Wells, and I wanted to congratulate everybody for what had happened, but also wanted to invite the community to a visioning session that we're hosting today over at North Point so that we can draw a vision of what the future of North Minneapolis looks like. And many of the people that Ron just mentioned are commemorated in this project, Spike Moss or Hoax, Susan Breedlove. I think Ron is in here too. I haven't found him. But anyways, that's what I was calling for.
All right.
Thank you for your call.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and that's it. We can continue on. But Mr. Edwards, now this beating by that this young lady and young gentleman got from the officers last year. So check me if I'm wrong, but they were going to charge these folks with assaulting police officers, correct?
They did charge them. In fact, they had already made three court appearances.
Uh huh.
Mm-hmm.
And so it didn't. They didn't get charged. The charges are dropped. And so, what's the next step?
No. Keep what happened? They don't say they didn't get charged. They were charged. They were
not charged.
They had three court appearances. They had three court appearances. They were getting ready to go to trial. They thought that they had them over a barrel. They couldn't find any private attorneys. But they had the law says you must have legal representation lest you decide to act pro se, which is a Latin word for representation of yourself. And so there had already been three, and the county attorney and them were stalling. They were stalling. They figured that they could intimidate the young people, the three young African Americans, young man, young woman, and a younger woman. So we're absolutely clear and concise. Yes. Mm-hmm. And then. And then about 5 hours after the press conference at the Urban League of Minneapolis, the announcement was made. Reggie Chapman received an immediate call because he was going with the story indicating that the county attorney was about to move this case to trial, if you will, and they indicated that upon consideration All charges have been dropped.
Wow. That's great. That's great news for those people. That was great
news.
Yes,
it is. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I saw some of the press conference things on there. What is, I guess my question, Mr. Edwards, what would be a suggestion for these folks that led this charge as far as next steps to securing that same kind of outcome for if this happens in the future to somebody?
Well, first of all, you have to stay the course. You have to definitely try to get your hands on the video, the body cam, as it is called, so that you have something to contest, because unfortunately law enforcement lies, misrepresents the facts as it pertains to this. We had a series of meetings with the group that I named, particularly Mr. Moss, Dr. Holtz. We had met with law enforcement, if you will, and you know, they were telling us that the Negroes were out of control, they were wild, they were screaming, and et cetera. I mean, it's kind of sad when you finally see, and again, it was the Hennepin County Public Defender who made it possible to do the right thing under color of law, to get their hands on the body cam. And then our Champagne and her brother reached out to some folks and said, you could go ahead. We are not going to block this evidence of the brutality that was carried out against us, and you may show it to the public. And that's just what we did. That's just what we did. We showed it to the public, starting with a private showing at the Urban League at 9 o'clock that morning, then a 10 o'clock showing to the white media, if you will. I put it on my worldwide program at 2 o'clock here from the Twin City, from Minneapolis and St. Paul, and lo and behold, by 4:30, 4:45, the county attorney had indicated, oops, we're dropping all charges. So that young family of African Americans is blessed. They are blessed because I'm telling you, buddy, they whipped that girl. They knocked her younger sister unconscious when they threw her into the fence. They beat Champagne, and they fired those tasers and tasered her for, we counted it again upon return to make, at least for almost 4.5 minutes they tasered her. Yeah, and they were enjoying it. You should have heard some of the things that they said after they had handcuffed all three of them and talked about they was getting ready to take them down. Then they started talking amongst themselves, thinking like people are fools, that they had been kicked in the head and that they had been attacked by the Negroes and et cetera. That was all fake. That was all showtime. And I think the public defender, I think the public defender did a nice legal action by preparing their briefs and what was supposed to happen, because actually on the same morning we had the press conference at the Urban League, the last of the three young African Americans, the youngest, the one thrown into the fence and knocked unconscious, was being brought in, and the prosecutor was talking about, what do you want to do? Do we make an arrangement, and et cetera. And she had legal counsel, and the public defender kept saying, we're not going to do anything, Judge. We want to go to trial. You know, and sometimes, because you don't have the same judge in all three situations. As I said, the county attorney on and about the 8th, 9th, 10th of August, et cetera, this man put 18 charges on them. He put 18 charges. You know, they put so many charges on Champagne that, she could have gone to the penitentiary for 20 years. I mean, that's the way it was. But that's the way they're doing to black folks all the time. And black folks don't have, it goes back even to your issue of education. Black folks don't have the resources, brother, understand, and that's why the jails are full all across the country. 2 million people are in the penitentiaries in America. No other country in the world on this planet, you know, has this many people incarcerated at one time. 2 million in the penitentiaries of the United States of America. So anyways, that's what happened. And Chief Arredondo, I must indicate, Chief Arredondo is conducting an examination of how this happened, if you will, in the case. Because, by the way, apparently the chief wasn't told that the case had been dismissed. He maintained he heard it from somebody else who had just heard it from somebody in the county attorney's office. I'm not sure, but the chief has too many, you know, deputies and assistant chiefs and people like that to be caught in a situation where the chief of police has to indicate he didn't realize that the charges had been dropped.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. Very interesting. This is a shocker, but also we're glad that, you know, the charges were dropped against these people, and this is just, that's nuts that they had even had to go through that. But we'll see what happens here.
Yes,
again, those phone lines are open.
We got some people. The phone lines are open, yeah.
347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. We have a bunch of people that just want to sit in the queue. I was checking while you were talking, Mr. Edwards. They just like to listen to the show clearly that way, and I'm cool with that. But there's one thing I'd like to bring up real quick here. One of the big things in Minneapolis and St. Paul is the funding of these different projects that people say will reduce violence, create a better education system, just a number of start community centers, basketball, football, baseball, pro youth programs, et cetera. And even with the state surplus, you still hear that there's not enough funding.
Tremendous surplus. Why don't you give that figure, Don? You got that in front of you.
Actually, I don't. I'm talking about kind of something else on that. But the surplus is supposed to be $1.5 billion or something like that. But I'm looking here from WGN in Chicago. And in the first 5 days of January, from legalized recreational marijuana sales, they made $11 million. $3 billion the first. Okay, and it hasn't ticked off. It hasn't stopped. And so by the end of January, Mr. Edwards, they're on track to do about $150 million in legal recreational marijuana sales. And I'm like, okay, that's a new revenue stream that Illinois didn't have last year or the last whatever years. So I'm looking at Minnesota. That would solve 90% of the problems in Minnesota when you talk about funding. But again, let's look at the Minneapolis Foundation. The people at the Drake Fire, I still don't know if they're getting any money, but the Minneapolis Foundation granted Pillsbury United Community $250,000 to assist with helping the victims of the Drake Fire. Are any of those victims going to benefit or see any of that hard cash? It's undetermined at this point.
I don't think so. Let me just step in and give you this, because there was a public hearing in the Minneapolis City Council about 12 days ago. Individuals, primarily African Americans, poor people, gave testimony and criticized the, in fact, last week's program, you made a point to make mention of what the policy of a foundation is with regards to the giving of monies. And you pointed out last week that, you know, foundations are not supposed to be making direct gifts to individuals and et cetera, but that's allegedly what was happening. The $250,000, you said, was that the Pillsbury United that you were talking about?
Yes, exactly.
Well, and you got to remember that's the former. Yeah, that's the former home of the current number two person at the Minneapolis Foundation, Miss Smith Baker, if you will. She is now the number two person behind the former mayor of the city of Minneapolis, R.T. Rebeck. And so it looks like some payback kickbacks. I saw the same thing happen after the tornadoes in, of course, the 2011. I saw those kinds of arrangements being made. I saw, as an example, Ms. Smith-Baker get a new roof on her home there in Minneapolis, Minnesota. And folks were trying to figure out, with a, at that time, salary of around $112,000-$113,000, she and her husband couldn't pay for that themselves, and some other poor people who were living in shelters and et cetera. But, hey, we were told on this program back then that we were toxic. We weren't doing anything but stirring manure, if you will. They use the other term. And that nobody should listen to us. We had a woman who used to call in, talk in terms of time for new leadership. I'm still waiting for her and the rest of them to activate that new leadership. Like I said, it's been... I got to tell you, now it's been 9 years, if you will. But your point is well made. I don't think that you're going to find out that the over 300, close 300 people who were victims of the fire there at the Francis Drake. And by the way, we were correct 3 weeks ago, this Saturday, when we pointed out that the individuals were not going to be able to go back in there. You remember they were telling the story that they were just going to tear down that portion of the building on the east side, and the building on the west side was going to be rejuvenated and et cetera. And we said on these programs, you can find the tape in our archives. We said we knew that was BS. Okay, that plot of land is already slated for, I understand, possibly a 27-story. Facility, if you will, with apartments, condos starting at a minimum of 5,000. I mean, that's a beautiful drive coming in from the airport into downtown Minneapolis. Yeah. It reinvigorates downtown Minneapolis, gets things back on the move, you understand? White corporate can, bring their guests and employees from out of town, out of state, out of the world, if you will, and facilitate, put them up. In fact, we're probably due to see the construction of a new big hotel. But first of all, the Marriotts and the Radissons and all of those have to be taken care of. But anyways, Don, your point is well made. What else are you thinking?
Well, I'm just thinking that maybe Minnesota should go ahead and legalize marijuana, and if they don't do that, they gotta have to do like North Dakota and do the fair tax system. When they're always here, they're always talking about, oh, we increase minimum wage. Well, now that you have this surplus for a few years running, do the fair tax, where everything is taxed a little bit higher, but they don't take the money, the state tax, out of your check.
Okay.
Across the board. There's a flat tax across the board, and you don't get any tax taken out of your paychecks, your state tax. And I think that would be a good move to send more people home with their money. I mean, it's working superbly in other states, and it could work here. I mean, if they're really gung-ho on raising the minimum wage, making sure people take home more money to do what they need to do, that's an option that's been on the table now for almost 15 years. And it's always the left that scoffs at it. They say, oh, we don't want to do this. We don't want to do this. And it just doesn't make any sense. So,
this comes at a time when food stamps are being cut. People got a surprise coming in, May? Over half of America's food stamp recipients will not be allowed to use food stamps. I don't know how people are going to eat. Maybe we could do it like they did in Germany after the First World War, just cook or put in water and boil sawdust. Did you remember that? You learned that in one of your classes. Sawdust, that was quite a menu in those countries of Europe in 1920, and et cetera, and here in the United States also. Because I don't know, with food stamps, being removed from the items that should be made available to people to keep them and their families healthy and their children alive. I don't know how you're going to do anything, man, if you don't have any food stamps, particularly given what's happened with the economy. You know what I mean? Yeah.
It's going downhill. With the food stamps being getting ready to be cut short. And a lot of this, though, Mr. Edwards, I can't find it right now on the computer, but I have it on my other computer. There's a young lady that was interviewed not too long ago in North Minneapolis. The story is not anywhere, but I did save it on a hard drive like a few years back, that had five children in North Minneapolis and was doing well over $100,000 a year in cash benefits. And I think people are looking at that and saying, okay, well, is that too much? Is that not enough? And people don't understand, you have even two kids, that's about $50,000 a year per kid, and that's not even sending them to private school. So I don't agree with that methodology at all. And I just think that if she needs the help, she should get the help, period. And I don't think that's a problem. But in some cases, you have families coming over here from other countries that have 10, 15 kids. Or children.
Yeah.
What are they going to do? They need some kind of assistance, and they'll get it before a black, white, or red American will get the assistance. And I think there's a discrepancy in the system. We already know there's a discrepancy in the system with the Department of Human Services. You know, we're talking about millions of dollars, probably more than millions of dollars. And with that said, there needs to be something done to address that piece there. And one more thing, I'm trying to find this, Mr. Eric Edwards, because just the craziness of the Star Tribune and what's going on. Somewhere here it said, and I'm kind of scanning, the governor is looking for some money to help him with the water supply in Minnesota. Let me see if I can find it here.
Land of 10,000 lakes, is that right?
There's a Star Tribune headline that said 56% of the state's water supply is contaminated. It was a big headline. No one talked about it other than the Star Tribune and a few light touches here and there. That was it. And if you understand anything about water, if 56% of your water is contaminated, all of it is contaminated. And they're piecemealing.
Ask Gremlin. Ask Gremlin.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Okay.
And so they're piecemealing it out to folks and not really giving people the necessary information that they need. Oh, I wish I could find this. I'm just looking because I laugh so hard, not at the fact that our water is bad, but how – you know, the governor's going to ask for some money, and these folks always ask for money to address things instead of going to the source and figuring out what's wrong and then asking for some money.
Well, why would he
want to
ask for any money when he has over $1.4 billion in surplus for his beloved state? I don't quite understand. But, you know, when you ask that question, then you have to ask the Native Americans how they got sucker punched. You know, all the money they received,
exactly.
Rightly so, and then all of a sudden the state of Minnesota, it's the sovereignty, says, oh, we made a mistake, and you red people got to pay that money back. I you know, it's hard to say what is happening in this country, but there are things happening which don't need the examination, if you will, for integrity. And good government and et cetera. But we are told as the sons and daughters of the African that it's none of our business.
Yeah, here it is. Governor Tim Walz seeks $300 million for water infrastructure project.
Mm-hmm.
He wants to the $3 million proposal is a part of a $2 billion borrowing package Walz is rolling out over the next several days. And this came out on the January 10th. Yesterday,
my birthday.
To be focused.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Happy birthday. The package seems to be focused on stormwater tunnels, and so it's a big package. But it's like this. This is how the mainstream keeps their jobs. They knew this was a problem. These engineers that work on this thing, they have lifelong jobs. They retire. They know that this is at some day the corrosion, of the cement, the drains, the tunnels, the trees going in the ground. You know, you can't stop a tree's root. I don't care how big the concrete is. If that tree mm-hmm. wants to grow and bust a pipe, it will. And so mm-hmm. there's no forethought put into this at all. And so he likes to he compares this to fixing your roof or typical home repairs. And I'm looking at this, I'm going like, okay, buddy. But, you know, there's other problems. Maybe if we went back to the education piece, you have people in those positions that would know what the hell was going on in the first place, and it wouldn't come to these huge packages that eventually will be passed. But it doesn't help.
Why, certainly. Certainly. That's how we take care of our buddies in the top 2%. The top 2% being the 2% of those that, quote unquote, are profiteers in the United States of America. You know, hey, you know, you're touching on the key pieces, Mr. Allen. We got 5 minutes left, so the phone line, somebody want to call in and tell us that we're being toxic. You know, we shouldn't be talking like this, our beloved governor. Like I said, you got, you know, $1.3 billion surplus, and you want to borrow and such. But who are you going to borrow from? Oh, you're going to borrow from your buddies at the bank, at First Bank, at Wells Fargo. You understand? Get the necessary kickbacks and all of that, you know. But people don't want you to talk like that. They don't want you to say anything about that. And by the way, when you talk about private homes and et cetera, what's the percentage of African Americans in the state of Minnesota that own their own homes? I think you had that information when we were at the preparation meeting earlier this morning. Black folks are renters. We basically can't get the necessary funding and et cetera. And so when those trees and those roots, as you just pointed out, start growing and crushing your piping and septic tanks and all of that, and that human waste starts backing up and et cetera. And boy, I'll tell you, when human waste starts go ahead,
home ownership in Minnesota, the overall is 75%. In the white community, it's 77%. And in the black community, in 2010, it was 25%. That's from the U.S. Census Bureau.
Right. We're getting ready to do their stuff as we speak. 25%. Isn't that fair?
Yeah. Minnesota, in 2000, Minnesota's on the bottom. States with high black home ownership, number one is Mississippi, and last on the list is Minnesota at
24.3. Oh, my. So they're not really even at 25%. And what is the top state where Negroes own their own home?
Mississippi with 55.6%.
Oh, good old place of Mississippi that folks always make fun of. Okay, got you. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and that's why a lot of black folks going back home, back south. They have a better chance of making arrangements and et cetera and being able to have a support base. Yeah, having a support base. Because folks, the fuckers, they don't want you up here, man. They don't want you up here. All they want
you
to do is entertain them.
Yeah, it's like very we're down to 90 seconds, 1 minute, but before we get James to take us on home, it's very interesting. When you go to the airport in Minnesota and you fly out to a place down south or the west coast even, or like I went to the east coast, the people that are working in the airports are totally different. In D.C., BWI, that area, those airports, he's doing almost everything. I mean, really working hard. I mean, I see black airline stewardesses. Wow. They must not be from Minnesota. Of course they're not. And you're looking around and you see store clerks and things like that. And it's a whole different animal. And people need to wake up and kind of take a look and see what's really happening here. We have less than 30 seconds.
All right, have James Brown take us on back home, man. Thank you, James Brown, my main man. The story of the